major storms coming to our area. Before storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
Public hearing on proposed ordinance for 1 year moratorium on data centers. We'll open that public hearing. We do have a number of people signed up to speak on that. So we'll start with that.
Mr. Chair,
I'm just going to assume that's Cindy Smith.
And you want me to lead off summarizing before we start?
Yeah. If you want to read the entire ordinance, but
no.
I don't want to read the whole thing. I just want to make sure and read the intro summary. Tom Danheiser there, the attorney, former judge and the attorney for Santa Rosa County, retiring, by the way. I think he's got about 2 months left, 3 months left, something like that. Anyway, it's a data center ordinance. So what would you expect? 100, 200, 1,400 people would show up and talk about it? Well, not quite that many.
This is the first of two public hearings, which is required by Florida law. As Commissioner Smith brought up, the proposed moratorium, it is the way to put in a rapid moratorium to stop any potential application, although it's my understanding from economic development and planning, there has been zero applications or inquiries about a large-scale data center.
Yeah, so we're here to fight about nothing because it's all made up and the points don't matter. This is the most ridiculous. You know, I've seen a lot of ridiculous issues be controversial in our area in the 13 years I've been doing this. This data center thing has got to be near the top of one of the silliest, both because it's not a real issue because there's no thing actually happening, and because of the presentation, the ideas that are being offered by the, hysterical opponents. It's just amazing. Anyway, Tom Danheiser, and again, you would not typically predict that Andrew McKay would be the guy out there trying to defend maybe the rationality of allowing data centers, since I hate AI so much. But, you know, here I am. just the weirder and wronger the people on the other side are, the more they push me to to be on the defense side. Anyway, Tom Danheiser explaining what this would actually do if it got passed. And this is, nothing's going to happen yesterday. It's the first of two hearings. They have to have a second hearing, and then they have a vote.
The moratorium would give the board the opportunity to have the proper time to establish the factual background and data, just like it did for the Wellfield Protection Area. When the county did the Wellfield Protection Area, it just didn't take a map and draw some lines around. It involved months of study to have the factual support for those restrictions so it could survive any court challenge.
Yeah, a good attorney guiding a government will counsel them to be smart in the way they fashion their ordinances so that if there's a legal challenge against it, it would survive that. Well, you don't just willy-nilly rush in and say, we hate data centers. Check, vote, 5-0, done. You want to go through some time and study and evaluate and create definitions and make sure you've done your research so that if somebody then sues you later on, like for a Burt Harris claim, which Burt Harris is a lot like eminent domain. It's not taking the land itself. It's taking the ability to use the land in a certain way. And so you're depriving somebody of their economic opportunity to develop it and make a profit. And you might be subject to, you know, compensating them for a restrictive land code vote, for example. And that's been his advice all along. So just like when they were developing the rural protection, the Wellfield Protection Ordinance, which would create a zone where you don't have, you're not doing a lot of digging or operation with certain kinds of industry because you want to protect the aquifer that's underneath. Same thing here. You want to go through a process and make sure that you've got time to study it so that you do it smartly.
Upon adoption, it will establish the temporary prohibition, which excludes any potential liability from the Burt Harris Act liability, which although is relatively small, it does exist, and there's plenty of litigation around the state. That is why the vast majority of counties around the state are first doing the moratorium to establish the proper factual basis for any permanent regulation which is imposed.
So it's a 1-2 process, right? This is not instead of a ban. This is preparation for a ban. This is, put a moratorium in place for 12 months so that you can study it. And not even at the end of 12 months, but at some point after today after the second hearing and the vote that'll come up next month, then eventually you can put it into place. Well, never let a good set of facts and a rational explanation get in the way of the pitchfork posse raising a ruckus and acting like the sky is falling because they're not willing to listen or do their research. Did I say it out loud? It's all the time. It's crazy, the said, especially on a topic like this. So remember the other day I was talking about what happened in Jay and Pitchfork Posse showing up where they don't really live but wanting to have their say because busybodies in the county. Cindy Smith, upset. What are you doing?
My question is, I know there's not an application been put in yet, but are we protecting someone on the other end in 12 months? That's my question because something's fishy here. And I've been looking at other counties in our state, and the moratorium, they're not going that route because it's already a big concern.
What's fishy? What are you talking about?
So these things need to be considered. I think that we need to go ahead and nip it in the bud, and let's put something in place and not work on a 12-month moratorium, and let's go ahead and get this done now and not wait because 12 months from now, we're going to be back doing the same thing that we're doing today.
So in a relatively unusual behavior pattern, Tom Danhiser, he definitely has strong opinions. He just doesn't share them typically in the meetings because he's the attorney. He's not there to spout off. Well, I think, honestly, Tom's getting pretty close to being done with this job. I think he's sort of had enough of some people, and he's willing to speak out and say, what are you talking about?
Mr. Chairman, in response, if you have the board can do what it wishes. Of course, if it wants to do a permanent regulation, you're going to re-advertise. You're going to send proposed regulations to the planning board, like every land development code regulation is required. And several months from now, you'll be able to review those permanent regulations. You don't know what's going to happen in those months.
So there's if you actually create a ban, you have to do it by changing the land development code, which means you have to start with the planning board, which means that there's going to be a very lengthy, months-long process of doing anything, as opposed to, well, we can just do two hearings and do a moratorium while we study it, and then if we actually want to institute a ban in 6 months, and I'm not advocating for that, I'm just saying for the people who want a ban, okay, we can actually do the ban more effectively if we start with a moratorium. Instead of what all you people seem to think is happening all around the state, that everybody's doing a ban, Tom says, no, they're actually doing moratoriums because, A, it protects you from Burt Harris claims, and, B, it actually lets you institute a ban right now instead of waiting. But
it seems like some people don't like yes for an answer, but this is the yes which gets you there quickest to put a block on any potential application. If you go the regular route, you're going to have a window of exposure of several months, which there's nothing you can do.
That's exactly right. If you work on a ban between now and when the ban goes into place, let's say 4 months from now, earliest likely, is that would be the case. Well, between now and then, somebody can come forward with a plan, and there's nothing you can do to stop it because it's not prohibited in the current land development code. So we're trying to tell you yes, and you're upset. In part, they're upset because Kerry Smith is the one that pushed this, and the Pitchfork Posse has decided that they hate Kerry Smith. So a lot of this is just political in Santa Rosa County. It's theater, as you would not be surprised to find out.
The planning department has already given an opinion, which is correct, that there is no prohibition in our land development code for large scale, small scale, medium scale. When we got a data center in this building, it just happens to be a small one.
Which is true. They have one in the county offices. There are data centers already in Escambia and Santa Rosa County. Not particularly large ones, but there are some. There are three, not, again, they're not hyperscale, not the huge ones, but there are data centers. And heck, if your business has 10 computers in a room, it's a data center. I mean, like, it's just, sorry, this whole topic just is so infuriating how ignorant the people who profess to know everything about it really are in what they say.
So there is no prohibition for large data processing centers. This moratorium would implement it. If you decide you don't want to do this, that's the board's option. Then you go through the normal process again. It goes to the planning board for a review, for their public hearing. It comes back to you for two more public hearings that we have to re-advertise for and have several months in the future.
Yeah, so long process. We're trying to save you time. Let us say yes to you. But some people don't want yes for an answer. Member of the public, a person I've not ever heard from before, Craig Morin.
I'm a lifelong county resident here. I grew up here. I've hunted here. I've fished here. I'm just going to give you all a few facts on these data centers. An average human uses 100 to 126 gallons of water per year. A data center uses 1 million to 5 million gallons per day. Water is the most precious source on this planet other than air. And y'all are jeopardizing that by putting this potential data center in this county.
All right, Candy, you've been around a long time here in Pensacola. No, just 3 years. You're 29. But you've But you've worked,
since 97.
You've worked a bunch of hurricane seasons.
I've worked them all.
What is the recommendation for the amount of water you want to have stored up in case of an emergency? How much water per day per person?
God, I think it was a gallon a day, right?
That's exactly right. 1 gallon per day, which... If that's in an emergency, as in you can get by on that small of an amount, how much would that be per year? One times
365 gallons.
That's exactly right. So he says humans use 100 to 120 gallons of water per year, and your antlers, your tendrils should be like, whoa, that doesn't sound right. It's not. It's completely false. Per day. Now, still, 100 to, it's actually 80 to 100 is the estimate, gallons of water per day that people use. If you include, like, agriculture, you know, indirect uses, like things you cause to be used, then it approaches to.
Like showers and dishes.
Well, showers are direct, but indirect would be like, it takes water the fields, okay? So you're causing that to be done by eating the food that gets made by the fields where they put down the water. So that's more like, it's closer to 200, it's like 175. So when he says per year, he's completely wrong. But I think he maybe just misspoke. If you say 100 a day versus 1 million a day, you can see it seems like a pretty big discrepancy. But I have a different question, which is, well, why would a data center use 1 million gallons of water a day? Because humans use the things that cause the data centers to exist and use water. So it's not like you can say that humans drink and shower 100 gallons a day and data centers are not human activity 1 million gallons a day. It's all human activity. It's just direct versus indirect. So it's a silly argument to begin with. Pepper Weimer.
These data centers don't benefit us. They benefit the billionaires only. There's nothing here for us. They're going to suck our water dry. This AI bubble is going to pop, and we're just going to be left with the bill.
But again, my question, and it's exhausting to have to continually explain this, but why would billionaires find there to be a profit to be made in creating data centers? Because they think humans want them, because they think humans are interested in having things like email and Netflix streaming and having digital downloads and having videos on demand and, you know, all the things you do that use computers, use data centers. And so it's not like some billionaires are out there trying to rape us of our water supply. Billionaires are out there trying to make more money by creating infrastructure that they think is going to make money because people are going to voluntarily pay for services like Netflix. Anyway, but I don't let these facts get in the way of, or this analysis get in the way of anything that they're doing. So eventually what happened is, and by the way, there was a lot more. I mean, you know, you had all the usual suspects show up and complain about this. And to their credit, you know, Kerry Smith is trying to explain, look, we're actually trying to do this the most effective way possible by listening to what the lawyers say. I'm here doing what you want in a more effective way than you're asking for it. Now, the fact that it's him is probably what's driving them crazy for whatever reason. But why would you be opposing this? Because they were. Their way of opposing the moratorium was saying, it's not enough. We want a ban. And Tom Danhauser's like, well, you know, this is actually going to work better for what you want. Maybe learn to say yes to your own desires.
So our mode of attack, I'm trying to go about it the best way the attorneys are telling us to do this. I mean, I'm not an attorney. None of us on this board are attorneys. I tend to go by their direction. We have two very capable attorneys that are both giving us this direction to basically put a 12 12-month moratorium in place in order to do the study to beef up our systems to basically go after it in a more comprehensible way. So, I mean, I don't understand the pushback on what we're trying to do. It's really baffling to me.
Yeah, it is baffling, but, you know, it's humans. And I've come to learn that, you know, humans are just kind of basically irrational creatures. Bobby Burkett.
First and foremost, there has not been any conversation once again for about the thousandth time of Santa Rosa County entertaining a data center in our county. The power grid alone can't handle it. This is beat this dead horse and wasted more taxpayer money and time. It's almost like a 200-foot flag.
Oh, burn.
Blows my mind. But here we are. Okay.
Yeah, no, he's not wrong. Anyway, so they eventually voted 5-0 to put a 12-month moratorium. Well, it's not really a vote. It's the first hearing. And then there will be a second hearing, and then they'll vote 5-0. I would assume they'll vote 5-0. Now, there's still interesting stuff to be had in the conversation. We'll tell you about that, you know, a little bit later on in the show. But just, it's amazing. The one thing I will say is they only had about 10 speakers, maybe 12 speakers, something like that. And I was concerned that this is going to be a 14-hour meeting because I guess the socialists just decided to stay home because none of the usual socialists showed up. They didn't want to cross the bridge. They didn't want to drive across the water. You know, they just wanted to leave Santa Rosa County just doing their own juices, I guess, like they had showed up at the PEDC and City Council in Pensacola and the Escambia County Commission meeting. So there you go. Step one towards a 12-month moratorium in Santa Rosa County on as of yet undefined data centers, but they will come back with a definition. 437-1620. If you're thinking about selling or buying a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they're extraordinarily good at this. In the peak of the market a couple years ago, they were selling over 200. Then it was 175. Then it was 165, which is still like three a week. That's still a lot when the market was harder with, you know, higher interest rates and, you know, kind of high prices and people being a little bit unsure about what was the future going to hold. Well, then this last year, back over 206, over 200 at 206. For a week. That's amazing. That's experience. That's, you know, knowing how to set the price and stage it and photograph it and list it and then how to do an open house and follow up and get to results that are, you know, closings all the way at the end. Not just trying hard, but really getting results for their clients. Find out why and just talk to Christina. Ask her. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Point.
Hey, you okay? You don't normally miss those shots.
Oh, I just haven't been as regular lately and it's making me feel sluggish.
You should try Metamucil. It's been a game changer for me. Metamucil's plant-based psyllium fiber helps trap and remove the waste that weighs you down.
Ace!
You're moving better than you were last week.
Definitely.
Metamucil keeps you moving. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Learn more at Metamucil.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft.
Oh, no.
That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
The 5-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio 92.3.
Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
Sure.
Were you a Little House on the Prairie girl growing up?
I was. I could not get enough of the Ingalls family.
The books or the TV show or both?
TV show.
TV show. Yeah. Okay, yeah. My wife's a big fan of the TV show. Not so much the books, really, but, you know.
I wasn't either. When I was younger, I was like, They were boring, yeah. But I loved the show.
Yeah, but, you know, Netflix is remaking this.
I saw that.
And so Netflix is remaking it, and the concern with every remake is, well, what are you going to do to it? You know, how are you going to ruin it? Are you going to Starsky and Hutch, and they sure did, and it was terrible, or are they going to Dukes of Hazzard? Well, they sure did, and it's terrible. What about Little House on the Prairie? What are they going to do? Well, no less an authority on things from the left, Slate, which is a very left-leaning, it's not quite Mother Jones, but it's, you know, super far to the left. So Slate, which I mean, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I mean, you should read all sources, especially people who disagree with you. So no less an authority than Slate, Rebecca Onion writes, she says, "Megyn Kelly, start your engines," she had written. "If you wokeify Little House on the Prairie, I will make it my singular mission to absolutely ruin your project." That's what she had put out last year. And Thursday, we have the reboot, 8 episodes, and Rebecca writes, "There's no other way for me to put this. Netflix did indeed wokeify Little House on the Prairie." So you've got contemporary concerns about politics, the closest friends of the family are now an Osage couple, they have a black doctor, they have a black shopkeeper, a French-Canadian woman who wears trousers and practices free love. So, you know, the polyamory, LGBTQ plus SIA, whatever crap is all in here.
That's not true, is
it? No, that's really true. Now, it doesn't sound like they've completely changed it, but they've definitely made it more 2026, which is unfortunate.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. No reports of any new U.S. military strikes overnight in Iran, but the Wall Street Journal reports on another plot to kill President Trump.
This intelligence reportedly came from Israel, and remember, President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu are split on how to proceed with the conflict, with Netanyahu pushing for more military pressure on Tehran.
Fox's Madeline Rivera reporting. In the preliminary hearing Thursday for the man accused of assassinating Charlie Kirk, Tyler Robinson's roommate and lover Lance Twiggs, in video questioning by Utah prosecutors from April, said,
"I just asked him in person if what he said was true the night before, and he said it was. I started crying a little bit and said he wishes he hadn't done it."
Twiggs saying his former roommate confessed to killing Kirk at least 3 times. The hearing expected to wrap up today. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 at News Radio 92.3, about 80 degrees right now. We'll get a look at our forecast. That's up in just a couple of minutes. Well, crews are moving on to the towers now at the old Baptist Hospital campus in Pensacola. This is after several weeks of demolition work has already been done. Project manager Joshua Wallace tells Channel 3 that it's the first time drivers just passing by will actually start seeing visible progress. Crews plan to bring down the towers section by section using water sprays and dust monitoring to keep debris out of nearby neighborhoods. All 3 of the towers should be down by September. The full site is expected to be cleared by January of 2027. Well, the vice chair of Escambia County's planning board now says he regrets his vote on the big land use change in Beulah. William Van Horn helped to approve shifting the 540 acres known as OLF 8 from commercial mixed use to mixed use urban. But now he says he'd vote with the lone dissenter, Jonathan Owens, if he could do it over again. Critics argue the change favors housing over the original promise of jobs. County commissioners will have the final say in that change. The Escambia Children's Trust no longer has to pay tax increment financing to the county and the city. Now, that's a change worth more than $1 million this year, but the money was supposed to help fund Mayor D.C. Reeves' Child Care Access Program. The city says it's looking into its next steps. Trust Director Lindsay Cannon calls the tax change a win for kids, but also says it's not clear yet just where that money will go. The Florida Supreme Court's new knock-and-announce ruling has generated a whole lot of questions about how police serve search warrants. Pensacola Police spokesman Mike Wood says PPD officers have nothing to change about how they operate. Wood says they've always done it right.
We're not doing that in the first place. It's very clear who we are and why we're there. There are marked police cars out front. There's loud banging on the door, yelling police, search warrants. So if that was something that we employed in the past, the no knock or very light knock situation, then that would affect us, but it simply doesn't.
The Florida Supreme Court ruled last week that evidence gathered during a search where officers failed to properly knock and announce can no longer be automatically suppressed at trial. Instead, the officer who didn't follow proper procedure could face a criminal misdemeanor charge. Woods says for PPD, that ruling really is a non-issue. Now, the Santa Rosa Island Authority has released their full schedule for this year's Pensacola Beach Air Show that runs July 17th and 18th. And it's a bigger show than usual this year, marking the Angels' 80th anniversary and America's 250th birthday. Flight demonstrations will start about 10:45 each morning with the Red Bull Air Force, followed by acts like the Pink Jet, a vintage Corsair, F-35s, and wing-walking stunts. Friday will bring B-1B Lancer flyovers. Saturday, a veterans flight tribute. Both days, of course, close with the Blue Angels, who will fly at 2 o'clock. And second, Pritchard police officer now facing charges in an ongoing misconduct investigation. Mobile County Sheriff's Office saying Jihad Hassan Irby was arrested earlier this week. He's charged with extortion, bribery, and using his office for personal gain. Originally, Officer Emmanuel Naman Dodge II was arrested and faced those same charges. He was also indicted federally on separate charges last month. Investigators say more arrests could follow. 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. And right now, we've, of course, got 80 degrees with partly cloudy skies. And let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
Morning weather update. We do have a 30% chance of rain today with temperatures warming up into the 90s, feeling more like the triple digits with that humidity. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping to 82. For Saturday, 30% chance of rain with mostly sunny skies mixed in. 92 degrees for your high. Saturday night, temperatures dropping to 81. Going into Sunday, 60% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 90 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping to 77. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
It's 5:36. Our next news at 7. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Anthropic has announced it has appointed Ben Bernanke, former chair of the Federal Reserve, to its long-term benefit trust. The trust is Anthropic's independent governance structure that advises the company and appoints its board members. Members of the trust do not hold any equity in Anthropic. Fiji Simo, OpenAI's product and business chief, said she's stepping down from her role at the company to focus on recovery after a severe exacerbation of a chronic illness. Simo joined OpenAI in May of last year, leaving Instacart, where she was CEO. She took medical leave from OpenAI in April. Reuters reports that Meta Platforms plans to start manufacturing an artificial intelligence chip from September as part of its plan to boost overall computing power to 14 gigawatts next year. The tech firm's data center chip, codenamed Iris, is part of a four-generation project for the company that it will design in-house. Futures are mixed as chip stocks lower. NASDAQ futures down by more than 100 points. That's your money now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary. And you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Hurricane season is here. Is your home protected? At StormTech Shutter Systems, they provide custom hurricane protection built for the Gulf Coast, including roll-down shutters, accordion shutters, Bahama shutters, storm panels, and storm fabric systems. Their professionally installed products are built to code and design.
20. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
The midterm elections. Who will win? Who will not? One question.
question about the 2026 races is already answered.
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Campaign 2026.
This is where the fun begins.
Every step, every day.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On News Radio 92.3. Informative. Informative. Local. Dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us. Joining us by phone, we have Mike Wood, the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Hey, Mike, welcome back, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, before we get into the big news, obviously dealing with the shooting and other things, I want to follow up on something that you and I talked about, gosh, now 3 weeks ago, I think. We were talking about how if you leave your car running and get out of it, that is actually, is it a crime or a moving violation?
It's a violation. Okay. So, yeah.
But this raised a question, which John had asked me at the time off the air, and I checked with you, but I wanted to get you to answer it, is what about remote start? If it is wrong, it's a violation for you to have your car running when you're not in it, failure to maintain control of the vehicle. This all came up in connection with Mike Kohler's incident, if I remember correctly. But okay, so what about remote starts for your vehicle? That's legal, right?
Yes, that's legal. And the reason for that, those cars, newer vehicles are built differently. If you start it remotely to warm it up or to cool it off before you get in there, if someone was to pop the window out and get it and try to steal it, it's not possible. The car won't function. It will die automatically when you try to put it in drive. There's different ways of preventing that theft, whereas vehicles that don't have that equipment, if you leave it running, the car can simply be stolen.
And perfect. That's exactly. But if you remote start it, get in, and then get back out, now you're in violation.
Well, if the key fob is not in there, it's still not going to function.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's one of the key determinants is whether it's fob dependent or not?
Yeah, then the officers looked at each of these cases individually.
Okay.
and determined whether it's a violation or not.
And by the way, I think I was wrong about that. Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Unfortunately, we find out that it was a violation when it's too late because the car was stolen. So automatically we know that it didn't have the anti-theft equipment on it. That's usually when we find out about it. Occasionally an officer will walk up maybe to a convenience store and remind the driver, hey, you don't need to leave that running. It's a dangerous situation. And that's usually all it takes. It's usually not something that we will always cite people for.
Yeah, one of the things you and I talk about all the time, and Chip and Bob too, the sheriffs, is that, you know, there are laws people don't realize they're breaking, and the goal of the PD is not to issue citations. The goal is to get good behavior, and a lot of times ignorance is the reason people do things. I think I was wrong. I don't think that was about Mike Kohler. I think it was something else, but that's okay. I just wanted to make sure we got that answered. Before we get to the news of the incident over the weekend, I do want to talk about Lafayette, Louisiana man Brenton Tillman is facing a murder charge for a shooting that took place while I was on vacation at the Budget Inn in West Cervantes.
Yeah, from what we understand, they knew each other. They were here working. I don't know working where, but they were staying in the motel. An argument began on the parking lot, and one of them pulled a gun and shot the other one.
Okay. Man, just bad things do happen. All right, so the one that everybody, of course, is very concerned about is what took place near Palafox at Intendencia, 2 a.m. on Sunday, July the 5th. Just a couple of things that we want to clarify. Of course, Chief Winstrom did a great job yesterday in the press conference. So far, we still only are saying or know that there are three guns and therefore three gun users involved, three gunmen involved.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at, and we're gathering body cam footage, surveillance footage from downtown, and we're asking for the public, if you had a phone and you were using it to record before, during, or after that event, we're asking for that footage as well. And what we're hoping to do is when we piece all this together, we have possibly a nonstop video of the entire event, and it takes hours and hours to do that. But that's what we're looking at right now. We want to assure the public, and both the mayor and the chief of police have talked to the mother of this 19-year-old victim and assured her that justice will be had. And we're going to keep on plugging away at this case until that happens. Now, we look at these comments on Facebook, and there's a lot of people on there that are saying, so there's not going to be an arrest for murder now, and that we went easy on them, and that's simply not true. The investigation is still ongoing, and homicide charges can and will be brought as soon as we're able to have a solid case. But unfortunately, these things take time to put together. But what we want to do is take our time and do it the correct way and make sure the charge sticks in court.
Well, and I thought Chief was very clear about this yesterday. He even used the word murder at one point, which is why I would expect that that's going to be the charge eventually. But just because a charge hasn't been given yet does not mean that it won't be given, you know, and I don't know why people misunderstand that. It seems very straightforward to me. He was also very clear that you have a lot of evidence that you're processing, including static cameras, body cameras, people who are volunteering cell phone information, which, again, you still want more if people know something and haven't revealed it yet. Crime Stoppers is available. They can call the police department. They can come in. You want help because it's very important, right?
Yeah, we could put together an hour video of this nonstop, and there's that 1 3-second piece that's missing that's key. And that 3-second piece of video may be on somebody's cell phone, and that's why we're asking for any and all footage to be brought to us. If they would be so kind to do so, we would appreciate that.
Absolutely. I have some questions about, and I understand that a lot of this you may not be able to answer, and of course, you know, you wouldn't tell me if you shouldn't tell me, and you don't need my permission, but I'm explicitly granting it to say I can't say yet, okay? Because I get that, and I agree. Your job is law enforcement and protect the investigation. It seemed like, based on what the chief had said, that this was, you know, pre-existing relationship, rival gang adjacent or gang members, a targeted attack, which means they were trying to kill somebody in particular. Do we know yet whether, or are you capable of saying yet, whether this was reciprocal gunfire? Like, was this a gun battle between people on both sides, or was this all in one direction?
We don't know yet, but what I can say is this beef is between groups has been going on for a couple of years now. So this is not the first time as far as a payback type situation. I don't know.
Okay.
And that hopefully will come out in the investigation.
Okay. Do we know yet, or can you say yet, whether the young person, the 19-year-old who was killed, whether in any sense, you know, he was involved in any of this, whether he was even the intended target or whether it's somebody else? Do you know? Can you say?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
That's, again, the six the folks that we're talking about, we do know they knew each other, but in what capacity, that's still all under investigation.
Gotcha. The chief had mentioned that they were maybe earlier in the night or even 20 minutes prior might not have been wearing masks. I got the impression that he was implying that maybe the people who were shooting were wearing something to conceal their identity at the time this happened. Is that correct?
Well, that's a possibility. So what he was talking about is how important this phone footage is. If we see one camera with the person putting a mask on or with a mask on, we're hoping that we can get some footage prior to that with that individual wearing the same clothes, the same height, the same weight without the mask on. That's why we're asking for this cell phone footage.
Okay. And then the charge against the woman was because the primary person that you arrested was the first person to raise a gun, first person to shoot, and then gave her the gun allegedly, presumably as an effort to conceal the evidence or not be able to be caught with the gun on his person. Is that what you believe happened?
Yes, that's what we believe happened. That's tampering with evidence. Unfortunately, we have that weapon back.
I thought this was a good question. I just want to make sure that we get the answer. Number one, is ShotSpotter is no longer active in our area, right? We don't have ShotSpotter right now?
No, we do still have it.
Oh, you do? But is it not downtown or is it downtown?
It's certain parts of downtown. It doesn't cover all of it.
Okay, so is this part of downtown covered by the ShotSpotter net?
I would have to look at the map and see. I know it's very close if it's not covered, but that wouldn't have mattered much that night with the fireworks and all that going on. It would have been overwhelmed. But fortunately, the officers, there were, again, we've said this a bunch, that there were 50 officers on top of what we had down there last year. In fact, the staff command, not only the chief of police, but his staff was down there, and the chief and deputy chief Coverdale got into a foot chase and apprehended a young man that was firing mortars at people, and he ended up having a gun in his waistband. So when we say all hands on deck that night, that's exactly what we meant.
And that's exactly the question that I was wanting to ask is, you know, would ShotSpotter have mattered? And it sounds like the answer is no, not under these circumstances, for all the reasons you mentioned. Plus, now in my head, I really want to watch the video, although I don't want body cam of it. I want the side video watching Deputy Chief Matt, you know, former SWAT team leader, tackle a dude. That sounds like entertaining video. So I'll take when I can get it. Other things I want to talk about with you, the curfew is, I know that's really not like your pay grade kind of thing. That's really a combination of the city council and the mayor. And of course, the chief has had an opinion about this, but you know, is it the police department's opinion that having an enforceable curfew for minors would solve not just this necessarily, because we've talked about how that's not exactly what happened here, but just in general, give you guys an additional tool that would be helpful?
I don't know that it would in this particular situation, but it couldn't hurt. It's one of those situations where something like that certainly can't hurt, and you have to look at how it's going in other cities. Did it help or did it hurt or did it do nothing? And that's something that we have to look at.
Yeah, have you? I mean, my perception is that it seems like it would help, but it might be the kind of thing that you do because you think it does something and then doesn't really. Do you guys does it work in other cities?
Well, we're looking at that, and unfortunately, a lot of times when a crime happens and you catch the perpetrator and they're underage, you know, it's already happened. The crime's already happened,
sure.
and it's too late. So that's something that we'll certainly look at. And again, that's something that's up to the city council, the mayor, and the chief of police will also have a part of the discussion, and we'll see how that works out. But you know, we can go. You know, what can we do? Everybody's going to talk about what are we going to do next year. You know, if we go in there with wands and have to check everybody for weapons, and we have the SWAT vehicle down there, the Bearcat, yeah, and all that, then we'll get accused of over policing. So it's you know, danged if you do, danged if you don't. But suffice it to say that we will have a plan in place in addition to what we had this year to keep everybody safe.
Absolutely. Switching gears just a little bit, I don't know if you heard me talking about it about a half hour ago, but Gulf Breeze, like most Santa Rosa County, is actually working on putting in school speed zone cameras. The one reason I wanted to ask you about this is because with Pensacola police, and I know you're one of the people that actually goes through the red light cameras and verifies them, the policy that they have approved is to let Nouveau Global, who is the service for their red light cameras, that not a law enforcement officer will be reviewing the speed violations, which I think makes sense because you don't need to have the same kind of law enforcement judgment involved. Plus just, you know, the resources necessary to do it. They're talking about it might be 10 times as many school speed zone violations as you have red light violations. But I wanted to hear your thoughts because you've been working with this program in Pensacola for so long. What do you think of that outsourcing to the company of that?
As one of the people that looks at these, I think it's a good idea to free up the officers from doing that, because it is a extremely intensive manpower situation looking at each and every one of these violations. But on the other hand, a person is a person. A police officer is a human before he's a police officer. And people that are not sworn officers can be trained to detect or trained to determine whether a violation actually happened or did not. So saying that the folks at the company are not able to do this as good as a police officer is just simply not true. They can be trained to do that.
Is it in statute? Does it require a police officer to verify the red light cameras, or could that legally be outsourced also?
I don't think that there's a law that a sworn officer has to look at, and I could be wrong on that, but I don't think that it is. I believe that at some point you could employ civilian staff to do that, but that's just not something that we're looking at the Pensacola Police Department.
How much resource does it take PPD right now? Do you know? Is there a quantification?
It's a lot. In fact, we're looking at different ways to get these numbers down as far as the citations or the violations stacking up. And we're exploring also having officers look at this in an off-duty capacity and get compensated for it. And that's something that's we're looking at right now to try to help get these numbers down, get the backlog down.
Wow. So the HR stress on your department is actually so high that for visual processing of the red light camera violations, that you guys are looking at, you know, taking regular cops and using them off duty like they would use to patrol a, you know, Seville or Walmart or what, or a bank or whatever, because we need their man hours on the street on patrol so much and it's starting to cause stress there. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, that's what's happening. So we're trying to keep the backlog down. We don't want them stacking up. And there's a lot more violations than we wish there were. And hopefully, once we get known as these cameras are in place, hopefully those violations are going to start going down.
One of the things, and I've talked about this with both sheriffs, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it with you, is the Florida State Supreme Court issued a ruling last Friday in which they said that knock and announce service of warrants is a mandate because the law says you have to do it. And if you don't do it right, the way it had been handled is that the evidence secured from, you know, what kind of the philosophy is, the fruit of the poisonous tree, is the warrant wasn't served right. We're just going to exclude that evidence at trial. State Supreme Court decided that is, A, not in the law. You're not allowed to exclude the evidence, and it won't do that anymore. And, B, it's not working to deter the bad behavior. And so they're going to go to what the law actually says, which is it's an enforceable misdemeanor against the cop who doesn't allow enough time for people to come to the door. Is this in any way going to affect you guys? Is there anything that you have to do differently because of this? Is there a concern that that would change police behavior, that you'd be worried under these circumstances because of that potential criminal charge?
No, because we're not doing that in the first place. It's very clear who we are and why we're there. There are marked police cars out front. There's loud banging on the door, yelling police, search warrant. So if that was something that we employed in the past, the no knock or very light knock situation, then that would affect us. But it simply doesn't.
Okay, very. Which I figured would be the answer, but it's my job kind of to make sure and ask. We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know? Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
I got an email to where it was an elderly lady. It was this person's grandmother, and he was asking, is it legal to have a mechanic turn off the airbag on the passenger side of the vehicle? And according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, it is illegal for mechanics, dealerships, or repair shops to disable a functioning airbag unless they have permission. So there are permissions granted for very specific circumstances, such as a medical condition that puts the occupant at a higher risk from deployment than from the crash. So it is possible, but there's some paperwork involved at the state level.
Okay, so if that's something that applies to you, it is lawful as long as you go through the proper process. And, I mean, as we all know, those of us who have passenger airbag cars, the car is already built with a clumsy mechanism of weight that it'll disable the airbag if it detects weight below an adult size, because children can be more hurt by an airbag than they're helped by it. That's why you don't let kids ride in the front seat. But good note. Interesting note. Okay, I would have never thought about that. But, yeah, some people with health conditions or health apparatus or whatever, an airbag can be more damaging to them than, you know, it would be safety for them. So excellent point.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If I can, welcome back, Candy. You guys are like cookies and milk. It's great.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, I love you, man.
You guys are killing it. We love to listen to you. And that laugh is just, it's off the charts.
It is the best laugh in radio or not in radio, either way.
Hey, when you come in, we can do Sugar Hill Gang. Man.
Absolutely.
Mike. Wonder Mike.
Syndication after that.
Mike Wood is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department, and really a great friend. Appreciate all the time, Mike, and answering all the questions. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Well, if Candy has the best laugh in all of radio, yeah, Mike Wood is the best PIO in all of communications. So,
but he literally is.
He really is the standard. I actually always tell when I go to these media panels, I always tell other communications folks, I'm like, learn from Mike, do what Mike does, because he's fantastic. Hey, if you are thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great selection of good quality used cars, about 300 on the lot. They sell about half every month, so 150 new cars are coming in. I mean, not brand new, but new, you know, to their lot. And what they sell is cars that are like a year or two old, 3, maybe 4 years young, 10 to 30 or 40,000 miles. You're going to be the second owner, maybe the third. They warranty everything to 100,000 miles or to 10 years, so they're only selling good cars. They only go out to buy A-quality cars. That's like ABCD, that's what they sell, is A-quality cars. And then they make sure good prices, and then they try really hard not to be the sort of people that you don't want to come see again, because, you know, a lot of times you feel icky when you leave the car place. You shouldn't have to. I mean, these are your neighbors. They should treat you well, and they do at Frontier. They do it in such a way that you don't feel pressure, you don't feel, you know, I don't want to see those people again. And then they follow up with you afterwards and make sure that you're satisfied as a customer. Like, why wouldn't you? Well, you know, if you're afraid of the product, but if they're proud of the product, that's what they do. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
If you've lived in Pensacola long enough, chances are a piece of jewelry in your life has passed through Beret. An engagement ring, a family heirloom, a necklace that needed a little extra care. For 40 years, Beret Jewelers has been the place locals bring the pieces that matter most. From custom designs to expert repairs to rings that start new stories and more, Beret does it all.
Santa Rosa, I am Jill Broxson-Teston, a parent of 4 amazing children. I understand a strong school system is one of the most important investments we can make in our children's future. That's why I'm running for School Board District 5. My mission is to be your strong advocate for our public school system. I'll lead with transparency and steady leadership to help ensure the long-term success of our district. On August 18th, I'll be honored to earn your vote.
Paid for by the campaign to elect Jill Broxson-Teston for Santa Rosa County School Board.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
The midterm elections.
Who will win? Who will not?
It'll all be covered on News.
Mamma mia, that's a some speast.
You've got spicy meatballs, Jack. Take 28.
Take 28. I love the Flubs version of that ad for Alka-Seltzer where the guy's getting the line wrong. That's great. All right. Coming up next hour at 6:20, we have the Transgressors Memorial Service. Find out why Brazilian homeschoolers are getting canceled and why Andrew loves Brazil for it.